Good afternoon. Welcome to the Special Committee on House Special Committee on Military and Veterans Affairs. Today is Tuesday, March 30th. The time is now 1:03. Present, we have Representative Tarr, Representative Klayman, Representative Nelson, Representative Story, and myself, Representative Chris Tuck. Let the record reflect that we do have a quorum to do business. Please be sure to mute your cell phones, and because we're wearing masks and we have someone moderating remotely, please speak into your microphone and pronunciate your words. Okay. I forgot how to silence mine. Okay, so I want to thank Robin Stevens and Martha Moore with House Records for documenting today's meeting, and Tom Raymond in the back for moderating the meeting. So our agenda for today is includes in consideration of House Joint Resolution 15 requesting that the U.S. Department of Defense invest in the Port of Alaska. Joining us is the bill sponsor, Representative Fields, and his staffer, Emma Potter. They will be presenting the resolution. Also joining us via Teams is Steve Rubufo, and he's the director of the Port of Alaska. So real quick, before we get into our presentation, we do have a committee substitute for House Joint Resolution 15. May I have a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I move that we adopt the committee substitute version for House Joint Resolution 15. That's version 32-LS0412/B.
Okay, thank you, Representative Tarr. And I'm going to object just for the purposes, if you don't mind putting on record what the changes are, Representative Fields and Emma Potter.
For the record, Emma Potter, staff to Representative Fields. This is updating some errors that we found in the document and just ensuring that it applies.
Any questions? Okay, I remove my objection. Any further objection? Without any further objection, the committee substitute for House Bill 132 is now before the committee. Representative Fields, please put yourself on the record and present the bill before the committee.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate the committee. Zach Fields, House District 20. Appreciate the committee taking this bill back up. It was moving along when the pandemic hit last year. And I think the context here is that this is one of 17 strategic defense ports. It's essential to have a port that will remain operational even following an earthquake because the material that serves our defense installations comes in through the port, the majority of it. And we just want to make sure that that can get to our defense installations even in the event of a natural disaster. A little bit of background about the Port of Alaska. I think most committee members are aware that it's called the Port of Alaska because most freight entering Alaska comes through this port and has more inbound cargo handling capacity than all other South Central Alaska ports combined. And if this port were disabled, we simply wouldn't have the ability to get products both for consumers and for our defense installations into the state of Alaska in any kind of remotely efficient manner. Military use. Jet fuel used at J-Bear is received through the Port of Alaska, and a lot of material that comes up to the interior actually is offloaded at the Port of Alaska and then moves up either by rail or road to those interior defense installations. Of course, with the F-35s, there's an increased need for reliable shipment of jet fuel. So strategic seaports are ones that support defense installations, are ones that are necessary for the operation of those installations. And I guess I just want to reference that when you look at the list of strategic seaports, some of them are in areas where if one port for whatever reason was not operational, it would be possible, albeit inconvenient, to switch to other ports. That's really not the case for a few of them: Alaska, Guam, and Pearl Harbor. There's not really a feasible port to switch to. You know, the Port of Alaska was out of commission. Could you offload goods and materials over at Point McKenzie? No, because they don't have a dock. So it's really important that this port remain operational even in the event of a serious seismic event. And I think committee members are probably aware that the soils right behind the port, uphill of the port, are these soils that can liquefy during a seismic event and then essentially flow downhill. So when you look at the corrosion on the pilings at the port, where the pilings have become very thin, if you had that kind of flow of material that was liquefying during an earthquake, it would endanger the port right now, and that's why this resolution calls for federal investment to replace those pilings, stabilize the port, and make sure it'll be operational even after a large earthquake. So here's a map of those strategic seaports. And again, to me, the takeaway is, for some of these ports, maybe hard to get into Port Arthur, but you can, offload at Lake Charles or, similar situations. Alaska, there really aren't great backups that can efficiently get goods and materials to our defense installations in addition to consumers.
Real quick, let me let the record reflect that Representative Rauscher just joined us. Thank you.
Because there's been a lot of press about Port of Alaska, potential upgrades to the Port of Alaska, I just want to be clear. The real imperative here is replacement of pilings in a manner that allows ships to dock and offload goods and materials at the port. There are other projects that might be possible, but that is the essential one for reliability in the event of an earthquake. And that covers it. If committee members have questions, I'm happy to answer them, and also happy to defer to Mr. Rabufo for very detailed questions about where the port might be in ongoing projects.
Thank you very much. Any questions for the bill sponsor? Representative Story.
Thank you, Chair Tech. Through the chair, Rep Fields, can you just sort of update me a little bit on your conversations with the Department of Defense and their comments on this resolution, if any?
Sure. So, well, and like I said, this resolution started last year, and it was not based on conversations with DOD, but it was actually meant more as kind of an overture to express the state's support for using federal investments to ensure that these installations can receive material that they need. So I haven't sort of had negotiations because we haven't passed this yet. I hope we can pass it and then have a conversation about what federal funding streams might be possible to tap to secure the port.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Fields. Representative Story, Representative Fields, thank you for that. I got a question. Did the Port of Anchorage receive any COVID transportation money from the federal government this last year?
I'm going to defer on that to the port representative.
Yes, good afternoon. This through the chair, this is Steve Rabufo, director of the Port of Alaska. We received no COVID money. And in the port industry, there were very few ports, if any, that actually did.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Any other questions? Representative Story.
Yes, and I'm not sure when we're going to be hearing from the port director, Rep Tuck, through the chair, but I'm wondering if they have had any conversations with the Department of Defense and looking for support or what other means they have been looking at.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, I guess I would just say looking at the scale of investment needed to replace these pilings would be really hard for the municipality of Anchorage to make those investments. And again, this is a port with statewide importance. So I guess I'm not surprised that the Muni didn't invest in that, because the scale would be such that it would take a massive amount of their funding and leave that funding unavailable for other community needs, hence the need for state and federal investments.
And Mr. Rabufo, do you have anything to add to that?
Yes, through the chair to Representative Story. I can tell you that there isn't a Army or Air Force general officer at a major command level who's been through this port that hasn't understood and appreciated the situation that we have and has expressed a desire to help. The challenge for DOD is that under current circumstances, there really are no mechanisms for the DOD to write any strategic port a check, in spite of what they see as definite need or concerns over what not addressing that need might mean down the road. We're kind of hoping that with this potential new environment in Washington, where, you know, earmarks may come back, that there's an opportunity to at least channel some funds on behalf of Department of Defense needs and wants here at the port to us for the for offsetting the otherwise costs of the modernization program that we're experiencing down here. In short, with respect to DOD, there is no shortage of support and advocacy as best they can for that which we need. The challenge is there's no mechanism for them to provide it without a little extra pushing from the delegation. And we speak also as often with the delegation as we do with the Department of Defense, and they appreciate the situation that we're in and have leaned forward to help.
Thank you. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, Representative Fields, it's been about 17 years since Anchorage was named the DOD strategic port, and you said you haven't really talked to DOD about this or about the port directly. Have you heard anything or have anything on record that they still are pursuing, you know, the port of Anchorage, or are they looking at other areas across the state?
Thanks, through the chair. I guess the best way to answer that is I've visited the port and follow the statistics on the amount of material that moves through the Port of Alaska. So that is what we predicated this resolution on, is the demonstrated reliance of our military installations on the port is measured by jet fuel, other products coming through the port.
Follow on. So through the chair, so there's nothing from DOD saying, yep, we want to keep this port going. You know, there's just what you see coming through the port that's making you pursue this.
That's the strategic through the chair. That's the strategic port designation. So, you know, when we see one of 17 around the country, I guess I take that as a pretty clear signal they value the port and rely on the port. And I think all this resolution does is say the legislature wishes to prioritize investment in this port so that our defense installations can continue to rely on it. Yeah. Now, I do recall when, I believe it is when the military made a decision to base the F-35s up at Fairbanks, part of that calculation, of course, was our position geographically in the world. But it was also about a reliability of infrastructure to make sure that we can get jet fuel up there and we can get other materials up there, and of course the port is essential for that.
I'm just looking specifically outside of the designation they gave 17 years ago of saying,
right,
a more updated saying, yep, we're still prioritizing the port, right, in Anchorage as a strategic port, or just reiterating the need for it.
Yeah. Thanks to the chair. I mean, I think the geopolitical need has certainly increased as Russia has taken on a more hostile stance toward the United States. But, before the next hearing, we can reach out and see if the DOD wants to comment on, is this still as important or more important of a port than it was 17 years ago? I think certainly China's power has increased vis-a-vis other world powers in the last 17 years, and Russia has become more overtly hostile. So those are those changes, I think, are part of what contributed to increased defense investment in our state. But we should have the DOD speak to that.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And before, I just want to check and see, Mr. Rebufo, you do have a presentation you'd like to share as well?
No, I did not have a I do not have a presentation, Mr. Chair. But I am here to answer questions.
Okay, I have one question for you. How old is that picture behind you, the picture you have on your background? How recent is that
picture?
About
8 months.
8 months?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Representative Rauscher.
Thank you. Through the chair, I was just wondering, I was reading a summary sheet here, and I'm not really sure who the question is for, but I think the summary sheet said that over half of Alaska's inbound marine freight, such as fuel and cargo, goes to the Port of Anchorage. It also supports four major United States Department of Defense installations, Joint Air Force Base, and then for Elmendorf and Richardson, Fort Wainwright, Eielson, and Fort Greeley. So I guess what I meant, are there other ports that you guys use in the state of Alaska? And to what percentage are those used?
Mr. Chairman, I guess
I think that is a question for me.
Yeah, I'm going to defer to Mr. Rabuffo on what different ports do.
Thank you.
Sure. Through the chair, and I apologize, I did not hear the questioner's name very, very clearly. So, through the chair.
I can restate it.
No, it's a Representative Rauscher.
Okay. Through the chair to Representative Rauscher. Thank you. Let me see if I can give you a seaborne logistics, primer for, to answer your question. As is stated in the fact sheet, here in Alaska, 90% of all the freight that comes into the state comes in by water. Around 5% will come in over the Alcan. Another 5% will come in by air. But we are, for all intents and purposes, an island, and we are serviced by waterborne freight just about everywhere. Of that 90% that comes into the state, half of that crosses the docks here at the Port of Alaska. Not the Port of Anchorage anymore, at the Port of Alaska. And half of the freight that crosses our docks continues moving to the 75% of the state population that lives along the road system outside of Anchorage. So our tentacles, our hub and spoke logistics operation reaches out to just about everywhere in the state you can get to by road or rail. And some of our cargo that comes into this port to begin with will go to the two barge operators that are just down the road from us off the port for delivery to Western Alaska. So, you know, substantively, we handle quite a bit of that freight. The other 50% will go directly by barge to Southeast Alaska and to some places, any place, I should say, Cordova, East and Southeast will get serviced directly by barge traffic out of Seattle, because it's much more economic to do that, and the volumes don't require them to be delivered by big ocean carrier vessels like we see here in Anchorage. I kind of hope that gives you the lay of the land you were looking for.
Any follow-up?
Yeah, follow-up. Does anything come in through Valdez for the military bases?
Through the chair to Representative Rauscher, Valdez receives barge traffic directly out of Seattle for the Valdez area, but nothing that gets distributed from there to any other part of the state. It's to take care of the hometown crowd. That said, the Department of Defense delivers all of its munitions through the Port of Valdez. Sounds kind of odd. It's the TAPS port for shipping out all the crude oil off the North Slope, but it is also the port of choice for Department of Defense for delivery of all its ammunition for all of its installations in the state, and they take it through Thompson Pass by road to include Anchorage.
All right, well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Representative Clayman.
Thank you. This is a question for Mr. Rabuffo. What's the current status of the lawsuits that have been going on with the municipality as it relates to the port and potential funding that might fund some of the construction?
And through the chair to Representative Clayman, here's where we are with the lawsuit. The trial has been held. It started in mid-February. It lasted a week, and everybody rested around the end of the third week of February. Where we stand now is the judge has asked both sides to prepare a report. which basically is a summation of all of the arguments that they've made during trial, of all the witnesses they called, all the salient points they want him to take under consideration. In lieu of closing arguments, he's asked them both to prepare these reports. The due date for the reports is July the 2nd. After he receives them on July the 2nd and does his review of them, he will reconvene for a short period of time to do Q&A with both legal sides to finalize whatever he thinks he still has as yet unanswered before he renders a verdict. So the timeline for us is we are done with depositions, we are done with testimony, we are standing by for our attorneys to provide these reports to the court by July the 2nd. Then the Q&A session follows, and a verdict will follow shortly thereafter. That's where we stand.
Follow up.
And is it federal court? And if so, which judge is hearing the case?
Through the chair to Representative Klayman. It is in the Court of Federal Claims. And I don't know the judge's first name, but his last name is Damich. D-A-M-I-C-H, I believe, is how you spell it.
Thank you. That's not D-A-M-A-G-E. So, and I have a question.
It's ironic, isn't it?
So, this is this port project has been barely hanging on by a thread since inception. And I think it's because of the original design and because of the layers and layers and layers of consultants that we had on that, which makes it really hard to identify who really is responsible for the poor design. So this particular one, this particular lawsuit, was about $320 million, or is it, how much is this lawsuit?
Through the chair to, I believe we are asking for damages of $325 million.
And do we know what, since 2009, how much we spent on the development of the port?
Through the chair, if I understand your question correctly, how much have we spent subsequent to stopping the expansion project on the modernization program is somewhere in the neighborhood of another $250 million. But I could get that answer precisely if you'd like it.
Yeah, I would actually like to see, since 2009, how much we spent on the design and development of the port, because I think it started off being around $250 million. I think we're up over $1 billion now, if I remember correctly. Just kind of curious on where we're at, how much we've spent over the last since we unleashed that we're going to be doing something new to the port and started on the remediation of it.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Yeah. One following up on that, one point we haven't discussed is that tariffs have gone up substantially on port users. And when you look at the Mattson letter supporting this resolution, Mattson's vice president says no single source of money can shoulder all the costs of port modernization. And, you know, that to me is the basic reality. Port users are paying more. The petroleum cement terminal project ongoing now is partly a product of that. But to bring the port up to standards that will survive a major earthquake, it is going to take additional investment beyond that users can bear.
If I may, Representative Fields, the money we spent on this port starting back from 2009 should have had all this fixed the first time around. Any further questions? Okay, no further questions. This concludes the presentation that we have on Joint House Bill 132. We will hold this. Actually, hang on just real quick.
HR 15.
HR 15. I'm sorry, I'm looking at the wrong deal. So HR 15, we will hold this bill. Please work on any amendments that you have to this resolution. And we'll hold this to our next meeting on Thursday, April 1st. At that point, we'll take public testimony. We'll take up any amendments, and I expect to move this resolution out that day. Thank you very much, Representative Fields. And taking a brief at ease. Okay, the House Special Committee on Military and Veterans Affairs has come back to order. Seeing and hearing no further business in front of the committee, we are adjourned at 1:29. Thank you.